This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It is great to be on the radio today talking about why energy matters. I'm Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, we're in our second year. So excited that you're joining us. We're coming to you from our home station, WGAU Radio, in the classic city of Athens, Georgia. Today, my co-host, Casey Boyce from Decatur, Georgia. Welcome, Casey.
Hey, Tim.
Man, it's great to have you. You know, last year, John Noel was our regular co-host, and y'all have tag-teamed, and you're coming on this year. We're so excited to have you as a part of Energy Matters.
I'm glad to be here. Now, you told me that I was the new John. I'm not sure I want to be the new John, but I'll see what I can do here.
Hey, you know, it's going to be hard to replace John. He is he's a classic. But we are really excited about your depth of knowledge that you've had, your experience, particularly your national perspective on things. So great to have you. Of course, you are an EV driver. You've got solar on your home. You do all the things that we talk about on this show today. You know, Casey, we talked about kind of reviewing some of the highlights from our 2019 year. So let's kick that off.
Yeah. So, you know, Tim, I was going back and looking at the shows, and I guess the first thing to say is that when you said you were starting a show about energy, kind of thought, well, how long is that going to last? And looking back over the past year, you know, you've covered a lot of different topics, and there really is a lot to talk about, even just in the state of Georgia related to energy and, you know, what's going on, you know, public policy wise, what's going on with businesses in the state of Georgia that are helping people live more sustainably and you know, increase renewable energy or things like that.
You know, energy does matter. And we name the show Energy Matters. And one of the things I think we're trying to do through this show is to connect the dots for people, to mm-hmm. let them see that, yeah, the way a state generates energy, the way you handle your energy at home, the options that you have to be able to do that, that it can really make a difference in not only your pocketbook, but in helping you be a better steward of what we have. So, you know, I want to continue to make the case, Casey, on why energy matters.
Well, and I think to your point, there are a lot of dots to connect. And so looking forward to sitting here with you and working with you and our listeners and our guests this year to really help connect those dots about why energy matters.
And we'd love to hear from you out there. I mean, Casey and I both live on Twitter. I mean, if you don't get some kind of response or like or retweet from us, you know, within about an hour, you might as well call 911 because we live on the platform. So if you send us a question on Twitter, I mean, one, we're going to turn around and follow you. We're going to engage you in conversation, but we would love to have you engage both us personally. You're at KC Boyce.
That's right, at KC Boyce, yep.
Just the letter K, the letter C, Boyce. I'm at Tim Echols. And then our show's at Matters Radio. And so we would love to have you engage with us. Well, Casey, we talked a lot on the show about ways that we get our energy. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, that it varies. Politics matters. Geography matters. Natural resources matter.
For sure.
You know, you take a state like Georgia, there's no oil wells here. There's no gas wells. There's
Thankfully.
No significant hydro. And so, you know, we've had to really import a lot of energy until we've really gotten a lot of solar.
Mm-hmm.
And that solar is homegrown. Some of our biomass is homegrown. But, Casey, you've been all over the country. You've seen that this is true, that these variables do make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's some big trends that we're seeing really across the country in terms of where people are getting energy, but it does vary. So you think about the Midwest and the Plains, right? They've got a lot of wind resources. Well, wind's a huge generation source there, and there are utilities that are paying people to take wind energy overnight when it's really generating. You look at places like California and Arizona that are really sunny. They're seeing a huge boom in solar. And then, you know, there are places like the Southeast where we've got a lot of biomass, and that hasn't grown quite as fast. But, man, there's certainly a lot of potential here.
Yeah. So, you know, folks have, I guess, varying opinions about what they think a state or, you know, their utility, their city, their EMC should be doing. And of course, Georgia has five Republican commissioners that are running their public service commission. That's not the case in every state. And most of these states, frankly, Casey, the governor appoints these people. You take states like North Carolina, like Florida.
That's right.
The governor appoints the commissioners. So, you know, early on in my career, I was a little critical, I think, of other states, but I've really softened up on criticizing other states and how they do things, because I have recognized that these other factors, these variables, politics, natural resources, you know, history, institutional experience, all of that really makes a difference.
Yeah. So you guys took some significant action last year around how Georgia is going to be getting its energy going forward through the integrated resource plan that Georgia Power filed. Do you want to talk about that and help our listeners understand kind of what that's going to look like going forward?
You know, one of the great things about the way that the Georgia legislature has set energy up in our state is they've essentially told the Public Service Commission, you're going to use this planning process. It's called an integrated resource planning process. It was passed in 1991. And we've used it ever since. It's never been amended. And it really gives us a 20-year look, Casey, out at where we say, okay, what's going to be the changes in 20 years? And frankly, Casey, we live in such a kind of instant society. Folks don't like to plan that long. I mean, we're tossing our iPhone, you know, maybe, you know, every year. We're changing out laptops. We live in a very instant society, and I think it's difficult for people to plan that far and to have the patience to do that. But it is a mandate that we're under, and I think you're a big fan of the IRP process.
I think there are some challenges with it, in part because of the falling cost of capital and for things like renewables and how quickly those things can be deployed. So, you know, you were talking about that 20-year look, and I'm kind of over here thinking, well, yeah, and it takes a long time to build some of this big infrastructure. How long have Vogtle 3 and 4 been under construction?
Yeah, right? That's right. So, well, I mean, would you favor a deregulated market? I mean, if you could just wave a magic wand and have Georgia exactly the way you thought it should be, would you have it in a deregulated market like some of the other areas of our country?
Yeah, so I think that deregulation has a lot of power to it in terms of using market to move what businesses are doing. I think the big challenge is that we don't really have a deregulated market anywhere in the U.S. other than maybe Texas, and that's being a little generous. You know, recently there have been some developments in the Northeast where they've got deregulation on the generation side. Well, states are saying you must do renewable energy. And so the market there is saying, well, how do we balance these things if we want, you know, renewable energy and nuclear and coal and natural gas all to compete on an even economic footing? If you're mandating that you must do something, how does that change the mix of the dynamics in the market? And you might get some adverse outcomes. So I think that's the challenge, is how do you create a market that is robust and actually allows it to function rather than something that serves as a tool for political interests on either side, right?
And my thoughts on this, because, Casey, I'll have 10 people a year say to me, why don't you deregulate electricity here just like you have gas?
Because right, we've done it partially.
We do have a deregulated gas market. Why don't you do that with electricity? And my answer for 9 years has been exactly the same, and that is things aren't broken here. So I guess that would lead us to think, well, if things were broken here, would you change it? Well, I might, because, you know, part of my job is to make it work. So if it's not working, then it's on me and my colleagues to come up with something that does. And, you know, thus far, the way that we've been doing it, the territorial law, having EMCs and cities have their own territory, having Georgia Power, being a regulated utility, have their own territory. That seems to be working. And as long as it's working, as a conservative, I'm kind of going to be slow to change on that.
Yeah, so the thing that I think is interesting, and I talk to clients all the time about this, is that even in areas like Georgia that aren't deregulated, consumers are increasingly having a choice of where they get their energy from. So it's relatively inexpensive, a lot more inexpensive than it was 10 years ago, to put solar panels on your roof, to put a battery in your house, to do the same thing on your business. Other areas of the country have other options. But I think that there are more consumer choices, even for areas like Georgia that aren't deregulated. And that's going to pose some challenges both for the utility and for you and your colleagues on the PSC going forward.
Well, let's wrap up this segment just in the last couple minutes here, talking about these various types of energy, giving maybe a thumbs up or thumbs down on how it relates to our own state. Let's start with hydro. Well, we've got Georgia Power owns lakes, and we've got dams on lakes. We're generating power. You like hydro?
You know, we're not going to blow up the dams in North Georgia, so, you know, it'll continue to be a part of our mix, I think.
And there's been some great unintended consequences with that.
For recreation, yeah, for sure.
Wonderful houses, great yeah. Water skiing and fishing in these lakes. All right, how about natural gas?
Well, I think that's going to continue to grow with prices being as low as they are and taking over from coal generation.
All right, how about nuclear energy?
Oh, nuclear. Well, we got 3 and 4 under construction at Vogtle. It'll continue to be part of our base load, but I think that's sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, how about coal?
Coal's going away. It's dead.
Yeah. Biomass?
Hopefully growing. We got a lot of it in the southeast.
Hey, stick around. We're going to have more great energy talk right after the break.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
BMVW is the place in Metro Atlanta to get your used hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or fully electric car. They're located on the south side near the airport, but it is well worth the drive. Go online to look at their inventory at ev-hybrid.com and set up a time to see the vehicle or even drive it for up to 3 days. I don't know of anywhere else in Metro Atlanta that you can do that. That's ev-hybrid.com, the best deal in town. ev-hybrid.com, ev-hybrid.com. Hey, welcome back to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Eccles. I'm your host, but I'm also a public service commissioner here in Georgia. I regulate energy along with my colleagues. My co-host today, Casey Boyce. Casey, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, so I am a senior product director at a company called Escalent, and we work with companies across different sectors. I work in energy, but helping them understand their consumers better.
Our guest today, CEO of Cobb EMC, Cobb Electric Membership Corporation, Peter Heinzelman. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tim. Great to be here.
I have been wanting to get you on the show for a long time, since you've been here in town. And so thanks for being here in the studio today. I'm really excited to introduce you to our listeners to talk about some of the things that you've done in the past, including some of the fun race car stuff that you've done. So I think I want to start with that, because you drove here in a Tesla today, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and you're going to need to charge on the way back. So Casey is in his BMW. I have a 2017 Chevy Volt with a V. So Peter, you've driven all kind of cars. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got into this racing stuff, what you were driving, and then I want to ask you how this Tesla compares to some of these race cars you've driven.
Absolutely, Tim. I am a certified motorhead, and I started racing cars, I guess, when I was about 28. and doing the track days like a lot of people do, and then progressing into competitive racing. So I was very passionate about racing most of my life, and I got the privilege to not only race in SCCA in the U.S. In various car classes, but also in the Middle East. I took the first motor racing series to the Middle East, moved 14 cars over there to help them get started, and then I've done a lot of racing in Europe as well, which has been a great privilege.
Wow. You know, as you think about driving on a race car track compared to, say, you know, driving on 316 or I-75 or I-85 or any highway, that any of our freeways that our listeners may be listening on, how is it different as a driver?
Well, as a driver, I mean, when you're on public roads, you know, safety is number one, of course. And so, as a driver on a racetrack, it's completely different, because the forces that you're exerting on the car and on yourself are tremendous. And your job is to drive the car at the limit of adhesion, right? So if you're not floating through a corner at the limit of adhesion, you're too slow, and you're going to get passed. If you're going too fast, you're off the track. So you really got to be on the limit, but in control.
Casey, you've got this BMW i3, and you know I had a guy named Sergio who worked for Georgia in Munich pick me up at the Munich airport in an i3,
mm-hmm.
and took me on the Autobahn and went as fast as the car would go, which wasn't that
fast.
That's
not that fast, about 93 miles an hour.
It felt a little unsafe in that car, but Casey, you've had your car out on a track before, just for fun, haven't you?
Taking it out to Road Atlanta. There's a group of i3 owners, and we go out there every once in a while, and it's a lot of fun on the track. You can't do a lot of laps before you drain the battery, but, flinging it around the corner is a lot of fun.
So, Casey, what question would you have for Peter about racing and the experience of driving a car on a track compared to, say, what you've done out there on some of the parade laps?
Well, you know, I'm just curious what you drove. What?
So I drove a Spec Racer Ford. I raced a Mazda RX-7 for a while, I raced a former British touring car, which
nice.
Are high performance cars. It looked like normal cars.
Yeah, tube frame,
like NASCAR. They're underneath. They're all race car.
Yeah.
And then I raced a Porsche 911 GT3R in Europe. Several of the Formula One tracks in Europe. So
very nice,
great privilege. But I've also run the Tesla on the track as well during some of our promotional.
And how'd you find
videos.
That?
Oh, it's fantastic. So we've driven that in anger, a number of laps around Atlanta Motorsports Park. So
okay.
I've yet to do Road Atlanta in this car or in the Tesla, but during promotional videos, we had a blast and taking some passengers to give them that experience, and it's fantastic. It's surprising. It's a heavy car because it's a battery car, but because the center of gravity is so low,
yeah.
the handling is really good.
So one of my friends has a Model S Tesla, mm. and he ran it up at Road Atlanta, and after his laps, he would have to exit out the passenger door, because if he exited out the driver's door, the cooling system would stop and the battery would heat soak.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he found that if he exited out the passenger side door, all the cooling, you know, pumps, fans, everything kept going, and he was able to have higher performance next time he went out.
That's a good trick, and there are people that are looking at trying to do an all battery car racing series here in the U.S.
So, well, I think Jaguar does that as part of the Formula E series,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Formula E, but that's big money, big time.
Right.
But I think, you know, more grassroots battery powered racing,
like an SCCA kind of thing.
Yeah, an SCCA or a NASA type thing would be great to get some shorter races with all battery electric vehicles. Be really exciting.
Very cool.
Yeah, so Peter, do you find that other drivers on the track that you may be competing against, is it generally, would you say, safer as a driver to be out there with fellow race car drivers versus, say, some of the drivers in Atlanta that, you know, that may be distracted, looking at their phone, putting on makeup, other things like that?
Absolutely. That couldn't be a truer statement. In fact, let me just give you a little story, which is the first time, my first actual competitive racing weekend, I went racing, and, you know, of course, you have a roll cage, you're wearing a fire suit, and you're wearing a helmet and all that, and everybody is trained to drive around a track fast and be safe.
And you're all going the same direction,
you're all going
right?
the same direction. Yeah, that's a great point. And the scariest thing I ever did was get off the racetrack, get into a passenger car with only a seatbelt on, going 80 miles an hour, which, you know, in Texas, there, you know, that's the speed limit, and knowing all around me that there were drivers that were distracted, you know, maybe less competent than a racing driver, and some going the opposite direction, and if it went wrong, it was going to go really wrong.
Yeah. It's funny because I had the exact same experience. I haven't raced but done track days. And the first track day I did, same thing. Took off the helmet, put on the seatbelt, got back on the highway, and was like, man, this is a scary thing, man.
And now it's even more frightening because of texting and things like that. One of my colleagues thinks I'm insane because I'm a pilot and I safely operate a plane. And what I try to tell him is that the most dangerous thing I do any time is get in a car and drive to work.
Wow. What kind of pilot's license do you have?
I have an instrument. I'm an instrument-rated single-engine pilot.
So when you compare driving a race car to, say, a plane, and you may not be driving high-performance planes. I have no idea. You're about to tell me, I guess. But what's the difference between those two experiences?
Well, the main thing is, in a plane, it's hard to hit something. But when you do, it's a little bit more punitive.
Oh, my goodness.
Flying planes is all about safety and really keeping yourself and your passengers safe. So I fly normal planes, single-engine planes for transport to A to B and, fun touring and sightseeing and things like that. So pretty normal flying. I'm not a stunt flyer or anything like that. There's a tremendous amount of skill that those guys have and those ladies have, and that's exciting, but that's not my bag at the moment anyway. But I love both. Racing is a fantastic opportunity, and I would encourage people to, you don't need to go jump into straight into racing, but just track days at Road Atlanta or Atlanta Motorsports Park. Well, if anybody has a curiosity, or all the SCCA programs that they have, such as autocross, and where you can race around car parks with cones in them. So if you spin or hit something, it's only a cone. It's a great way to get into it and see if you really like it.
And that was my first experience. In high school, they would take Terra Stadium down in Clayton County, and they would take the very big parking lot on Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I guess they rented it, probably had to have insurance. And they would put these cones out for this Gymkhana or autocross. I don't even know what Gymkhana means, but that's what they called it. And they would have various different types of cars, Corvettes, Porsches.
All different classes.
Mazdas, different classes. And you would basically see how fast you could go through the cones, and then they would award prizes and different things. And you didn't really even have to have a racing license or anything to do that, right?
No, you're racing on a race course that is defined by cones, so there's nothing to hit that's punitive, and you're racing one at a time, so you can't hit another car. And it's a fantastic way to compete against time in different classes. And you don't have to have a fancy car. I mean, that's what people assume. That's expensive. I mean, anybody, you take your Miata out there, take any kind of lots of old cars, every car you can imagine fits in a class.
Wow.
And so you can go out there and experience a kind of a racing experience, and then see if you like that and you want to carry on doing that. Or some people want to get more competitive and do more intense stuff. Other people will do that for a career,
Casey, I don't think I've ever told you, but my son Joseph, who's in the Coast Guard, had a Porsche 944, an older one. I think it was a, 93, 94 model. I forget. But it wasn't a fancy car. It didn't cost him very much. I think he paid like $2,100 for it or something. But we started going to this NASA, National Automobile Sports Car Association, I think is what it stands for, to their track days. You had to pay a little membership fee, and then you had to go through their class. And so I would work the corners. I went through the corner training. So I would wear the headset and be the flagman behind the fence. My son would drive the car. He would get points for me working, and then he would pay $100 for the track day. But we began going to these, and I began learning about racing just from working in those corners. And I really developed a great appreciation for, one, the safety consciousness of this culture. I mean, it's big, isn't it, Peter?
It is very big. Everybody's focused on safety first and fun and performance second, and that's the way it should be.
Casey, you would like to think that maybe driving a passenger car that we would have that kind of emphasis, but I think kids go through driver education just kind of to get through it, and I don't think we really have this moment where kids buy into the fact of how important safety is.
My kids are a couple of years off from driving, but I've already told them that driving a car, like you said, Peter, is the most dangerous thing that they're going to do on any regular basis, and they're going to need to go through a driver training course where they get on a skid pad and learn how to threshold brake and all that good stuff before I ever let them go solo.
Yeah, an out-of-control car in a safe environment is one of the best teachers you can have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sounds like it would be great for our kids to go through like this DEA training that NASA does or SCCA, and that would be a great training for learning to drive.
Yeah, then go on SCCA.com and look up their autocross offering. And, and there's lots of other programs they have, too.
Well, just a quick plug, the BMW Car Club Foundation has a program called Street Survival that's geared for teens, and it does exactly that. So no affiliation, but worth checking out for parents out there.
Well, great. Stick around. We're going to continue not talking about racing. We're going to transition back to energy. But great to have Peter in the studio. He's going to stick around. Casey Boyce here at Casey Boyce. I'm at Tim Eccles. Our show's at Matters Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
Hey, this is Tim Eccles. We talk all the time on Energy Matters about buying a used EV instead of a new one. Let someone else pay the depreciation. BMVW Auto Sales, one of our show sponsors, can fix you up. Go to their website at ev-hybrid.com to see the ever-changing inventory. BMVW has every brand, every type of EV, and they'll even let you test drive it for 3 days, show you how to charge it and drive it for maximum performance. That's ev-hybrid.com. ev-hybrid.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by BMVW Auto Sales.
Support for Energy Matters comes from BMVW Auto Sales, the only place to get your used electric vehicle in Metro Atlanta. Mohsen and his staff will loan you an EV for 3 days to try it out, and you won't be disappointed with the deal that you get there. Check out his new solar canopy while you're there. See more at ev-hybrid.com. ev-hybrid.com. Welcome back to Energy Matters. Thanks for listening. Hey, we want to help you save money on your power bill, to use technology, and to live more sustainably. We've got Peter Heinzelman in the studio. He's the president of Cobb EMC, and we're going to get right into what he does for Cobb EMC and what an EMC is and how all that works. But my co-host, Casey Boyce, today. Casey, it's great to have Peter in the studio.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing what he's got to say here.
Yeah, he's driving a Tesla. You've got a BMW i3. I've got a Chevy Volt. And so we're big electric car fans. Peter, I guess I want to start with this transition to Cobb EMC and how Cobb EMC, now under your leadership, is not only owning some electric cars, but you loan them to your members. You've got this free overnight charging. Why is EV so important, and are you seeing your members respond?
We are seeing our members respond tremendously. They love our EV program. We've got 4 EVs in the fleet so far, and they're growing. And what we're seeing out there is the educational part of EVs is really important, because until you get, what the English say is, bums in seats, until you get people driving these things, that's when you get converts, because they see how great it is to see. But you asked the question, why is it good for members? Well, obviously you have the attributes of the electric vehicles themselves, which we'll talk about shortly. But what a lot of people don't realize, Tim, is that the more people that have EVs and charge them off peak, the better utilization we make of our entire grid. So all members / ratepayers benefit the more EVs are out there.
Casey, what he just said is what I need somehow to be able to convince my Republican colleagues throughout Georgia that EVs, they're not some liberal toy, they're not some sissy machine, that they are actually something that benefits the grid and helps ratepayers.
Absolutely. Well, and we've seen utilities across the country do something similar to the Cobb EMC program, you know, with discounted or even free, in some cases, overnight charging. And that's exactly it. And Peter, you can probably talk about this from Cobb EMC's point, but it's severely underutilized, right? We build for our biggest demand day because we don't want the lights to go out. And then we use half of it or less most of the time. So you get those EVs on, you get them charging, you're utilizing all that equipment much more frequently, and it spreads the cost out.
Absolutely. So we have a NightFlex rate, which is the first free overnight residential charge rate in the nation. And we're not doing that because we're giving away the farm. We're doing that because it creates efficiency in our system and benefits all our members.
How does that rate work? We've got folks that listen to our show from all over the country, and some of them are utility executives, they're EMC executives. How does your rate work?
So our rate works so up to 400 kilowatt hours in a whole month, anytime between midnight and 6 a.m., it's free charging. And that's not just for EVs. That's whole house charging. So if you want to do laundry at that time, run your pool pumps, whatever, it creates that efficiency either way.
So folks don't need a separate meter for that.
They don't need a separate meter. It's hassle-free. You call Cobb EMC and you say, that's what I want to sign up for, and bam, you have that rate. You have that benefit.
What kind of customer satisfaction or member satisfaction are you seeing from this in terms of bills?
We're seeing a lot of excitement. People can save, I've heard numbers up to $200 or $400 a year. Some people are saving by utilizing this rate in a very advantageous way.
What about, and Casey, we talked about helping consumers be more conscientious, more aware. I mean, it's a big part of what, Energy Matters is all about. We want them to see that it does matter how you're handling this. I mean, do you think this conscientiousness, this consumer awareness is important?
In our business, we talk a lot about customer engagement, not just customer satisfaction. So I'm curious what you're seeing in terms of engagement from your members with this rate. Like, are people becoming more aware of their usage? Are they buying more EVs? Are they using other products and services that you're offering? Like, what's that look like?
Yeah, they are. I mean, of course, all the early adopters and some of the solar rooftop folks, a lot of those folks have EVs. You expect them to come onto the rate really quickly.
For sure.
And they did indeed. Yeah. They were really excited, and they're evangelists about it, and that's very helpful for us. But what we're really trying to hit is the mainstream person.
Yeah.
And these mainstream folks, once they learn about it, they are coming in droves, and that's exciting. Once they understand not only the benefit of EVs, but the benefit of how much they can save on fuel and the lifestyle that's involved with EVs, they're really coming on more and more.
So that program's had a good positive impact in terms of your ability to market EVs and get more people. Actually, as you said, bums in seats.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's all in combination. Really, I mean, you have to have a comprehensive program because it really is still a lot of education to be done. And I think as Tim said earlier, really, this is not a left or right issue. It's not a green issue or anything like that. This is a practical issue. EV cars are fast, fun, practical, and improve your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want that, right?
Absolutely.
and so just giving people the chance to enjoy them and to drive them, like with our car sharing program and lending out our existing fleet cars, is tremendous in convincing people. And then once they do, they become evangelists.
I had a guy come into my office recently who's one of your members. He was talking to me about another program that's in the Georgia Power Integrated Resource Plan. We kind of changed the conversation to EVs, and then he had told me that he had checked out the Cobb EMC Nissan Leaf a couple of different times for a couple of different meetings where he wanted to make sure he showed up in an EV, and he really appreciated the fact that you guys made this available. He really considered it kind of an extraordinary service.
Yeah, he did. He may be the same guy where one guy came and he disappeared for 4 hours. We thought it was going to be more like an hour drive, and we started to get concerned about it. But in fact, he wanted to run his normal program, go to work and go to the places he did. He did his entire program, and he came back and he bought one a week later.
So, Peter, you said that you're still having to do a lot of education to your members on EVs. What are some of the biggest things that you're hearing from your members that are maybe misconceptions that you have to clarify?
I think there are two things that impact it. The number one thing we hear is range anxiety. And it's been said that people have range anxiety about electric vehicles until they buy one.
Yeah.
And then they understand and they realize there's no such thing, really. The charging network, number one, is outstanding. But even more importantly, 10% of the people or 10% of the time do people ever need a charging network. Almost everybody charges at home. It's more than enough. And the lifestyle that creates when you don't have to go to the fuel station, you get to charge at home. And it's, once every 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
You don't have to charge every night. Once people understand that, then it really convinces them. But we still have a lot of education to do because when people aren't familiar with it, they go, oh, range anxiety, I'll look at that down the road. Well, the truth is, it's here. I mean, you can't get a Tesla now with less than 310 miles of battery range. It's either 310 or 370.
Peter, Casey, one of the issues we've had in our state, we've had great EV adoption in northern metro Atlanta counties, but as we get away from the metro, folks have, they're more skeptical. And one of the things I'm most excited about with CobEMC doing this and with Oglethorpe Power, which is kind of a, I guess, a joint EMC conglomerate, hiring Alan Shedd, and we've had him on our show before, is the possible, I guess, mentorship or leadership that you all might have as CobEMC in getting other EMCs to do something similar. I mean, is that a possibility?
It is, and we do a lot of work. I mean, Georgia EMC and some of the other, and Oglethorpe, that we do help other EMCs understand what we're doing and why and what the benefits are, and other EMCs are starting to follow. But we need more penetration amongst the EMCs, but also in just the rural populations, because the average rural commute's not more than 40 miles either. I mean, and even if it's 40 miles each way, it's only 80 miles. Any electric car now can handle that easily, and so I think our rural folks that might have longer commutes or less access to a charging network need to be educated on how much better their life is actually on a routine basis with an electric vehicle.
You know, I would say if you're a listener to Energy Matters and you're a member of an EMC, it would be, I think, worth your time, to engage with maybe some of the directors there, the staff. You have your annual meeting. Peter, what, knowing the model that EMCs are, how family-friendly they are, how approachable they are, how these directors are elected from the membership, how would you advise an EV enthusiast or a person that maybe that wanted an EV, how would you encourage them to engage with their EMC?
Well, I think they need to ask the EMC if they've got cars that they can borrow and whether it would be advantageous. I think the EMCs need to put on arrive and drive events and education events for members, and if members can ask for that, the EMCs are all about the service. I mean, EMCs always respond really well to member requests, and if they see enough excitement, they're going to do that. But EMCs are also being proactive to try to do that. But if you're a member and asking, I would say, look, how can you facilitate me driving or trying an electric car or various electric cars, and what are the various programs you might offer to incentivize that? Some people are doing $500 rebates for chargers. Other people are doing rates like we're doing, or a combination of all those things. So really, just have a conversation with your EMC, because one of the beautiful things about EMCs is they're real people with real faces that you can have a conversation with any day of the week.
Casey, you've done a lot of research on utilities. Do you find that to be true? EMCs are very approachable?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just because of what Peter said, right? You've got folks that are elected from the community that serve as board of directors, people that live in the communities. And what I found is that EMCs tend to be the most responsive utilities.
And they're nonprofits as well.
That's right.
I mean, Peter, does that change it at all, the fact that you're doing it for a different reason?
I think so. I think people are maybe less suspicious of why we're doing it, and I think they understand that that all EMCs are doing it. Our main job is to provide low cost, reliable power, and we do that at cost. And so if we do something, every time we do anything at the EMC, the first question is, what's in it for the members here? How does the member benefit there? And clearly, when it comes to EVs, there's a huge incentive to benefit members here.
So you guys have done the math, and it works out in favor of your members.
It works out great.
Great.
I'm very excited about the contagiousness of this. I was down at Jackson EMC. I'm a member of Jackson, but Central Georgia EMC, and I noticed that they had a Tesla in the back that they were doing something similar with. Well, I'm Tim Eccles. I'm at Tim Eccles on Twitter. Casey, you're
at Casey Boyce on Twitter.
And CobEMC is on Twitter, right?
That's right, at CobEMC.
At CobEMC. So stick around. We're going to have more conversation with Peter Heinzelman from CobEMC.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's G-E-M, carservice.com.
Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to SolarSunWorld.com. That's SolarSunWorld.com.
Hey, I'm Tim Echols. Welcome back to Energy Matters. Our show's at Matters Radio on Twitter. I'm at Tim Echols. My co-host today, Casey Boyce. Casey, where are you at on Twitter?
I'm at Casey Boyce.
And tell us again, Casey, where you work and what you do.
So I work with a company called Escalent and work with energy utilities across the country, helping them understand their consumers better.
And you live in Decatur.
You're into
soccer. You drive a BMW i3.
Boy, that's all you need to know about me.
Yeah. And Peter Heinzelman, the president of Cobb EMC. Peter, you live over on the other side of Atlanta. You drive a Tesla.
That's right. I live in Cobb County.
And tell us one other fun thing about you that you're into besides flying airplanes.
I like flying and driving anything that moves. So I'm going sailing next week. I'm a boat captain as well.
Oh my goodness.
I like sailing. I like flying. I like driving. If it moves, I like to operate it.
Yeah. So maybe another show we can talk about wind energy and how that impacts your sailing experience here in Georgia. Well, I wanted to kick this final segment of the show off and talk about the history of EMCs. And I think Amicalola Falls, or Amicalola EMC, was the first EMC in Georgia. But EMCs in general, Peter, this was created to solve a problem, right?
That's right. I mean, rural areas were not getting electric service in their areas. And thanks to the federal government at the time and the REA Act, we were able to make it legal to create co-ops, communities to come together, create a co-op, create an electric company owned and controlled by its members, and get loans from the federal government to run electricity out to their area and to provide electricity. And it's been, that's 80 years now, and it's been a very, very successful model.
So you could have folks moving into Atlanta, living in Atlanta, never really understanding the value of an EMC and never having experienced that because maybe most of their life is in a metro area.
That's true. And even Cobb EMC customers, some of them don't understand that it's different than an IOU. And they ask us why we sent them money back in December and in January. And that's because it's a co-op. You know, we're meant to provide it at cost, and it's all about the members not making a profit.
And some of these EMCs do this Operation Roundup program, right, where you can authorize them. We did this. You authorize them to round up your bill to the next dollar, and then you put that in a fund and you give it to the community, right?
That's right. And so far, Cobb EMC does that, and we've given away almost $5 million to our community charities and children in need, and it's been a very effective program.
And then the Project Share box, I check that on my Jackson EMC bill, $5, and then that goes to the Salvation Army, and they're able to help low-income folks that are experiencing struggle.
That's right. EMCs are all about their community, and I think I think understanding how much your EMC does for your community is really important, and I think most rural folks really understand that well.
So, Peter, we talked on the previous segment about how EMCs do tend to be very responsive to their members, but we also talked about one of the challenges that I've seen sort of looking at the lay of the land, which is that, you know, in Georgia, and this is true elsewhere in the country, a lot of EMCs tend to be a little bit more conservative in terms of the programs that they offer their members or what they're doing. And we talked about some of the challenges around getting EVs in rural Georgia served by EMCs. Cobb EMC is not like that, though. I mean, you guys are not just an innovative EMC, but you're one of the more innovative utilities out there. And we talked a little bit about your EV programs. Can you talk about some of the other things that you're doing on innovation in the energy space?
Absolutely. You know, we pride ourselves at Cobb EMC on being innovative and being forward focused. And that's really paid off for us. For example, we were one of the ones early ones to invest in redundancy, underground work, and electronic switching. And because of that, we're the third most reliable utility in the nation, and that's really benefited our members. But you know, things like trying to gauge where our community wants to be on the sustainability front has been something that we've excelled at. We've got a solar and battery project on campus that we're working on right now. That's a rooftop solar and plus a battery. We're going to have solar smart flowers out front. But even before that, we have the largest solar offering east of the Mississippi of any EMC. So we've always been out there out front, really anticipating the desires of our members.
And is that solar offering, is that part of your generation mix, or is that a community solar program, or how are you making that available to your members?
No, this is over 155 megawatts of solar. So this is industrial scale solar, which is much more economic.
Yeah.
And it is part of our regular generation mix.
Casey, one of the things that I'm, as a Republican, that I'm really excited about is here we have an EMC that's sitting in one of the most Republican parts of our state, in Cobb County, up in the northwest part of Metro. They're doing all of these sustainability things, right? The loaning of the EVs, putting industrial solar, talking about sustainability, all of this. And I feel like that it is going to have a very positive impact in helping some of my colleagues and some of my Republican constituents, honestly, to appreciate the fact that these things we're talking about aren't really partisan issues.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the heart of conservative is conserve, right? And so that's what you're talking about here, is conserving natural resources, conserving economic resources. You talked about how this stuff is cheaper for the EMC, cheaper for your members. I mean, this makes sense regardless of whether you're, you know, red, green, blue, or purple.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to spend three times as much money on solar, then you have to start asking some questions, of course. And we did when solar was more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the cost curve has come down to where it is, this is just
a
practical matter. This is nonpartisan energy matters.
So, Peter, I know in our integrated resource plan this year, we approved 80 megawatts of utility scale batteries that we gave Georgia Power the permission to obviously come back to us for the final approval, but we're pretty much giving them carte blanche on where to put it, you know, whether it may be at Fort Gordon, a military base, or some other Army, Navy, or Marine base in Georgia, or at a college, or I don't know exactly where they will wind up. But do you see batteries as being a real significant part of the solution for Georgia as well as other parts of the country?
I do. Battery costs are coming down rapidly, but of course they started later than solar, they will come down at around the same pace, but it'll take a little bit more time. And so as batteries become more affordable and the use cases grow, I think you're going to find them to be more and more prevalent. For example, I think instead of building a solar farm with a solar generating facility on its own, you're going to see a lot more solar plus battery. So that instead of having a 5 or 7 hour asset, you have a 10 or 12 or someday 24 hour asset.
So what's your view on utility scale versus kind of residential or small commercial scale batteries? And I ask because there's a program that a utility by the name of Green Mountain Power that's up in the Northeast, an investor-owned utility, is running where basically you can get a Tesla Powerwall as backup power for your house for relatively cheap. I think it's $35 a month or something like that. And the reason that they're able to do that is that they reserve some of the capacity in the battery so that they can manage the grid and basically reduce their demand charges, right? And so you guys are subject to that too. And so do you see a program like that as being something that potentially is worthwhile for EMC members, or do you see the future more on the grid scale?
Absolutely. As we go through time, I think the distributed energy resources, which is kind of the category where you're talking about,
yeah,
that's a great example, will become more and more useful over time. And the EMC model itself is probably best prepared to implement that, because we can do whatever the members want, mm-hmm, as long as we have time to do it, because we have power contracts that we'll need to leg out of over time and replace that with those types of distributed energy assets. That's going to be outstanding. In the meantime, I mean, we'll be working on that more progressively, but in the meantime, utility scale is really where the economics come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to say that solar power is cheaper than gas, it really needs to be at a utility scale to achieve those kind of economics. We have a bit of a problem, quote-unquote problem, here in Georgia, and that is our energy rates are extremely low. Right. And all of our citizens benefit from fantastically low energy rates, which is great for industry, great for jobs, great for economic development. So it's not really a problem, of course. But when it comes to solar economics for, say, smaller applications like rooftop, it's less economic, or it takes a little bit longer to get the payback than you would in, say, a California or a Vermont or something like that. But it is well worth it. And a lot of people want to do it, partially for economic reasons, but they want to do it for a lot of other reasons as well.
Yeah.
As we wrap up the segment in the last couple minutes, I've got to ask, after hearing you say that, and I think about my own evolution in this energy world, you know, over a 9-year period being an energy regulator. Casey, you've evolved too, as you've had experiences, got to, you know, experience technology, et cetera. I mean, Peter, is this something where you're seeing your members evolve, right? Maybe they borrow the car, the electric car. Then they begin asking questions about batteries, and then they're noticing the solar. Is this kind of a sequential evolution, you know, in becoming a geek or something? Or is it something that has to be, like, embraced by the whole society before most of your members are going to get it?
Well, like a lot of technology, I think it has to move from kind of the early adopters, or, you know, we might call geeky adopters initially. That will not sustain an industry or move it forward, because that has its limits. It's got to be able to penetrate the mainstream. And but the good news about that, I think, is it's really addictive. Once somebody drives in an electric car, they love it. They want to buy it. Once somebody has a battery in the home and they see the benefits of that, they want to buy that. Once they introduce to somebody that has rooftop solar or solar plus battery, they want to do that. And maybe not even for fully economic reasons, just for their own sustainability goals and to feel good about what they're doing in their society. So I think really it's a snowball effect, and we've got a small snowball here. I think it's rolling, and it's rolling ever faster, and I think it's getting bigger much faster. And I think taking and having the politics kind of come out of it, I think, is certainly very helpful.
Wow, it's been so good having Peter on the show. One, because he's such a fun guy, and all the stuff that he drives, sailboats, airplanes, race cars. I'm surprised you can settle for something as boring as running a utility, right, after doing all the things that
he gets
done.
In his Tesla every day.
But, Peter, thank you for being in our state, for leading CobbEMC. You're doing such a fantastic job.
Well, we're really enjoying it. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Great. Casey, it's been really good having him. Always good to have you on the show. What's your Twitter handle, Casey?
It's at Casey Boyce, and great talking with you guys today.
Yeah, great. I'm Tim Eccles. I'm at Tim Eccles on Twitter, and the show's at Matters Radio. You can always go to WGAUradio.com and hear any of our back episodes. Have a great day, everyone.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.